In this session, we're going to address the whole issue of the big idea. I actually have it earlier on, like session 7 or something like that, and it's still that way. Yeah, it is session 7, but I'm actually doing it later on because I used to have this one earlier, and then I'd say, hey, we're headed toward the big idea, and then we'd have these other sessions after it. This is how you get there. But I decided to actually switch that and do it in the order that we've got in our 7 steps. And so that's why it might be a little funny to have that as session 7 when in reality we're dealing with it after we've already done session 10, yeah, which was our last time. But in any case, we get it all, and hopefully you will be convinced of this is my goal today, that you'll be convinced of the importance of speaking in such a way that people will come away with one central idea, one big idea of what you're saying. Why is it so important? Haddon Robinson says it well in Biblical Preaching. He says, a major affirmation of our definition of expository preaching, therefore, maintains that, and he's quoting himself here, page 29 of my notes, expository preaching is the communication of a biblical concept. So there's his definition, right? Communication of a biblical concept. Well, that affirms the obvious. A sermon should be a bullet and not buckshot. Ideally, each sermon is the explanation, interpretation, or application of a single dominant idea supported by other ideas, all drawn from one passage or several passages of Scripture. He leaves himself open at the end there that you can have an exposition that covers more than one passage. We'll call it topical exposition. Maybe you've got 3 different passages on the same subject. Let's say anger. And so one passage is going to tell you one aspect of anger, then a second, and then a third. But you're actually getting 3 different points, which ideally is the central point of that first passage, the central point of that second passage, the central point of that third passage. In any case, we'll talk about that more later. But at this point, what we need to understand is exposition is the communication of a biblical concept. Now notice what he says at the middle of that I've underlined. A sermon should be a bullet and not buckshot. Can any of you explain that for me? What's the distinction between a bullet and buckshot? Natalie? Okay, good. A bullet is small, a bullet is precise. Buckshot is...
it kind of blows everything up once it hits.
And what is buckshot made of?
Bullets.
Many, many small... pellets, I guess. Pellets is not the right word either. The word we used when I was a boy was BB. A tiny circular ball. What do you call? Not ball bearings. Well, ball bearings have hundreds of little BBs in that that are greased, and so that the ball bearing, that is what you use it for. Let's see if we can illustrate it with a deer, all right? You're out hunting for deer. Now, why you'd want to kill this beautiful deer, I don't know. We're hungry, okay. Well, you should go to the store and get some food, you know. But anyway, if your goal is actually to kill the deer, would you use a bullet or would you use buckshot?
If I'm not a good shooter, I would use buckshot.
If you're not a good shooter, you use buckshot. So what would buckshot do? It'll just spread 1,000 little BBs. And some of them will probably hit the deer. Will it do any damage?
Yeah,
Maybe if you're really, really close to it. But my guess is you're probably not going to get close enough to it. My guess is if you got close enough for some of that buckshot to hit that deer, the deer's probably going to go, oh, that felt really good. I've been itching on the backside right there for a long time. Can you scratch me on the left side too? You hit the right side. There's a huge difference between a shotgun and a rifle. Okay? A rifle, which one of these is going to use a bullet?
No.
No?
No, you put a
shotgun. Here's what goes inside a shotgun. All these little tiny BBs. And I forgot to bring my little buckshot, but I normally will bring that to class. It's it's one that's buck. The buck has already been shot out of it. Is that the right way to say it? The shot. Actually, we call that shot inside. It's called shot. When I was a boy, we used to shoot with BB guns a lot, and that was just one of those little shots, you know. But we'd use basically like a rifle. We didn't use bullets, but we'd use one of those little shots. But it had the same effect of a rifle. So if you're going to shoot that deer, would you use the shot on the left or would you use the bullet on the right? Which do you think would kill the deer? The bullet would kill the deer if it's located at the right place, close to the head or heart or something. Natalie?
Can't you kill the deer with a buckshot?
A buckshot that would be shot at a deer at a normal distance is not going to kill it.
So it's a power thing.
It's some of those little shots may end in the eyes and they'll blind the deer and the deer will run around and hit trees or whatever, run away. They're not designed for deer. Shot is designed for what?
People.
Birds. Shot is designed for birds. So if you've got, if you're shooting for duck, and the whole flock of duck are flying above you, if you've got a shotgun, you can go up there and hit kind of in the middle. And some of those little shot are going to go through the wing and that sort of thing. And those birds are just not going to have any effect. But some of those perhaps are going to hit the head of one or two of those ducks. And the duck's going to fall down. Then you send your, like my son's dog is a hunter dog. You send the dog, go to get it, you know. And they'll come and bring back the bird. I know you can't relate. I'm really glad you can't relate because we don't have any guns here. Well, we do have guns. I used to live on Rifle Range Road here, you know. And when I was on Rifle Range Road, I used to go biking with my boys when they were small. And we were near the rifle range, and people would be shooting, and we could sometimes the shot would hit the tree above us and that kind of stuff.
It's a military range.
Yeah, it's a military range. But most Singaporeans don't know about this. That's why I thought, I want to illustrate for you how to use an illustration. If you're using an illustration that the people can't relate to, then you need to actually explain it. I was doing that. I preached at Cox Sang's Church on Sunday. You were in the first service. Yeah, I was. In the first service, I was talking about, at the beginning of my sermon, I was talking about the difficulties, just health issues I've had lately, and I said, you know, last month I missed church. My wife and I both missed church because both of us were, for the first time in our marriage, 35 years, both of us sick on the same day. It was kind of an unusual thing, you know. Anyway, and I told him, I said, I don't want to give you an organ recital, you know, so let's go. And everybody kind of looked at me like kind of funny, and I said, oh, do you know what I mean when I say that? So you, there needs to be some context. So when I preached at the second sermon, an hour later, I told everybody, I said, you know, my mother-in-law, she's a wonderful lady, but she lives in a retirement community, and they all care about one another and stuff. So they're always having these conversations over their meals. Well, Edith, how's your hearing today? Huh? Huh? You know, and Edith says, how's the liver doing? You know, and, oh, it's feeling pretty good. How's your gout? Is that gout? Yeah, okay, well, I'll pray for your gout. And and are you walking okay right now? Are you feeling bad? You know, how's the back doing? Because anyway, so they call it their organ recital. How's your stomach? How's your heart? They go through the various organs. And so it's a little play on words. It's kind of a fun thing that these old folks say. They're all in their 80s pretty much, you know. So they call it their organ recital. And so anyway,
there's
that's
a board game called Organ Attack.
Yeah. Organ Attack is a board game?
It's very fun.
And is that like the game Operation where you where you try to you try to attack people's organs?
Inflict people with diseases.
Oh man. Yeah. Sort of like a hexing game kind of a thing, huh? Well, anyway, I realized that I needed to give a little more context in that first service because people looked at me kind of funny and they thought, I think that was supposed to be a joke, but it just fell flat, you know?
Some
did catch it? Okay, well, thanks for your encouragement there. Because you were there, you know. I don't know if it helped. You're in the third row. You didn't catch it in the third row, so.
I caught it.
You caught it. Okay, good. So now that we understand what a bullet is as opposed to buckshot, now what does Haddon Robinson mean? That a sermon should be a bullet, not buckshot. The sermon has to hit the head. Okay.
Like,
yeah.
We have to get it. Like,
yeah.
Catch what you're really trying to say.
Okay. So you catch what the speaker is trying to say, and it's a central idea that kills, or that really has an effect.
So it's a sniper shot, one shot, one
headshot.
Yeah, sniper shot, a headshot. If it's not, what is it like? It's like buckshot. And what is a buck? And what is a buckshot sermon like? It's talking about a whole bunch of things. And if you talk about a whole bunch of things, let's say you've got 5 or 10 different things you want to say in your sermon, do you really think it's going to have an impact on people? You're hoping that. 2 sentences or 1 minute that I had devoted to this is really going to impact the person. In reality, what happens is that the person's going, ooh, that's a little convicting. I hope you'll move on. And sure enough, you do. You move on to talking about something else. It's not so convicting. And then the thing you're talking about that's not so convicting to person one, it is convicting to person two. But they're saying, please don't develop that point. So you don't. And you move on to another point. And everybody just sort of, they're feeling like the deer that's saying, oh, that was good. Oh, yeah. That, yeah, you scratched, you got me where I was itching a little bit there, but then we didn't really have any impact on me. And so, yeah, let's just move on. And it's a sermon that doesn't really have impact. So what you want to do in your sermon is you want to hone in on one key idea, which is the key idea of the passage. And when you do that, and your illustrations and explanations and applications are all contributing to that central thought, then it will have effect. So I was trying to do that last Sunday in my sermon on the first 4 verses of 2 Thessalonians. I saw how Paul he affirmed this afflicted church. So I call the sermon Affirming the Afflicted. And my goal was to have the introduction all relate to, are we affirming people? that are going through difficulty. And then have each of my main points all relate to that idea of how do you actually affirm people? How do you really actually help people that are going through difficult times? And then close it up with the main idea that shouldn't sound so unique, shouldn't sound so new, but in the listener's mind says, oh yeah, that actually kind of does sum up all the verses that we've talked about today. That's my goal. Does it always happen? No. Some sermons are more effective than others. I have the advantage on that particular sermon that this is my fifth time to preach it. So each time I was able to refine it a bit more, and then that way I can make it hopefully more of a bullet instead of buckshot. All right? Any thoughts from you about that? You with me on this? Do you see the importance of it? We looked at this definition earlier when we talked about what expository preaching is, I think in our first or second session. But this idea of being a bullet means you have a central idea that will have effect, essentially. Okay, here's our process that we've looked at so far. Back to page 27, 28. We have been working our way through the text. We have been trying to find out what the text means. We have gotten a exegetical idea or the central proposition of the text based on our study of the passage and their structure. We've thought about, well, what would the purpose of the sermon be in light of the developmental questions, these three developmental questions? Am I going to mostly explain, prove, or apply that exegetical idea? Well, okay, if I'm going to do apply it as my main idea, that's what we're actually going to do on the right-hand side. We've moved our sermon basically up to stage five. Step five. Still two more to go. But getting that CPS, that central proposition of the sermon, or getting that homiletical idea is really, really key. It's not just preachers who see the importance of one main idea in a sermon. Public speakers have talked about this for the last 100 years. It's basically assumed by all speakers and teachers of the art of public speaking that you have one key thing you want your audience to capture. The only exception I've seen is Abraham Kuravilla, who wrote the recent article in the final edition of JETS for 2018, the Journal of the Evangelical Theological Society. He said, time to kill the big idea? He wrote an article saying maybe it's time that we don't really think that we should focus on one key idea from the text, because actually the text may have more than one, and it probably does. So he's trying to say, well, I don't think this is really a valid thing. And he's got a lot of influences. He's the one who's teaching homiletics at Dallas Seminary, which is I think it's the seminary in the world that has emphasized this idea of the big idea. Others have used other names for it. Haddon Robinson calls it the big idea. The biggest idea, is the idea here. Others, like Ramesh Richard, call it the central proposition of the sermon. He's saying that there are other propositions in a sermon, but here's the central one. Here's the main one. Sometimes we have the words homiletical idea being used. These are all the same. Dominant idea is what maybe some other teacher might say, or main idea is the one I'm actually using the most. All right? We've talked about subject complement statement, and you all have given me 9 subject complement statements. Most of you did pretty well on that. You were able to think in terms of beginning a sentence, with the central thing that the paragraph or whatever is talking about, and then you complete it. And I'll review that in a minute. Synthetic statement is another way that people said this. What's synthesis is always more difficult than analysis. Synthesis is looking at the big picture. And I'll tell you, I struggle with this. I'm committed to synthesis. If I'm struggling with my sermon for this Sunday that I've never preached before, where I am one sermon summing up the whole book of 2 Corinthians. So I'm committed to get 13 chapters all in one easy to understand homiletical, you know, synthetic statement. And it may sound easy, but it's actually very, very challenging. I've gone through several versions of a... I'm just trying to think of be what? Because every one of my sermons going through the Bible, I'm calling it be such and such. So I've been be responsible. That's where I've been lately. Be responsible. Boy, doesn't that sound like the kind of sermon you're going to want to hear? I've been thinking about that. And so many people in my church have been going through so many difficulties. And I've been envisioning myself this Sunday up there going, okay, be responsible. And I can just see their countenances out there going, Pastor Rick, I'm trying to. Do you have anything for me? You know, one of the ladies in our church is looking for a job. She has applied to 457 jobs. And she has one that's hopefully today, perhaps she's going to get some response back. But she has to leave the country tomorrow. And so she's going to a nearby country and hoping that this job will go through. And they'll say, come on back in. She can come on back in as an employment pass. But I just can't. I've been saying to myself, well, is that the central idea of 2 Corinthians? Be responsible? So I was talking to my wife about this. And by the way, those of you who are married, even if you're not married, talk to your roommate or closest friend about this when in working through things. I was really glad I talked to Susan about this because she said, honey, really? You're not going to tell all our suffering people are be responsible. She said, how about be responsive? And I said, you know, actually, I think that really is what Paul's saying. Paul's telling the church, look what God has done. Look how God's working in your life. Can you just be responsive to him? And I said to her, how is it that I can work on this sermon for hours and hours and struggle with it all? I talk to you, and within 10 seconds, you figure it out. And anyway, I'm just glad that I have heard. So I would encourage you to talk to someone else about it and say, I'm struggling with this sort of thing. Or you can do this for illustrations as well or applications. Hey, here's the central idea, I think, here. But can you think where this shows up in life, you know? Talk to other people about this kind of thing, and you'll find that they'll help you get some. They'll help you get some things that maybe you haven't thought about before. But Haddon Robinson uses the term biblical concept. I like that because he's saying it's coming from the text, and it's singular. It's not plural concepts. So he's saying get it from the text and sum it up in one point. Sermon idea is often the way we will say it. Central thought. I'm getting maybe redundant to the point of boring. Thesis statement, proposition. What is the main thought? What is the central idea? All of those really are all saying the same thing. They're all saying, don't give me a whole bunch of buckshot, please. It's not going to have any impact on my life, and I'm just going to be confused as to what the text is saying. Can you make it simpler for me? Some years ago, I had one of my doctoral students. He was doing his doctorate on preaching to an Indonesian congregation here in Singapore. I'm trying to remember. I don't think I told you this story, but forgive me if I told it. So he surveyed four different groups in his congregation. All right? So can you imagine? He's got, socioeconomically, he's got Indonesian professionals. He's preaching them in Bahasa Indonesia, okay? That they're at the top socioeconomically. And then he's got students. And so, good group to preach to that are studying here in Singapore. He has sailors who are not a regular group, but when their ship comes in and they come to his church. And then the other group are domestic helpers, domestic workers, you know, maids in houses and that kind of thing. How do you preach to a group like that with four very diverse groups, subgroups within your congregation? So he has tried to study postmodernism, because realize that all four of these groups are affected by postmodernism. Which means, help me with postmodernism. What does that mean? No real absolutes. Everything's relative. What's most important is being relational. Truth is not that important. Life is just so complex in a postmodern society in which we live. He realized that all four of them are affected by postmodernism, because he polled them all. And he found that the concept of relativism cut all the way through all four of them. So his question was, how do I improve in preaching to this group? So he surveyed them all, what they remembered from his sermon, you know, after preaching a sermon. So he passed out these things. He did this for a few weeks. And it's kind of humbling for the pastor to actually do that right after preaching. Did you know what I said? You know, basically a sermon evaluation for them all. And then he studied and he studied for himself how, if I'm going to be preaching to a postmodern audience, what do I actually need to do? And he found, when he surveyed those groups, can you guess which one of those four groups told him the most, saying, Pastor, please keep it simple. Just keep it simple. Would you say it was the professionals? Was it the students? Was it the sailors? Or were they the maids, the domestic helpers? The sailors? You'd say sailors? How many of you'd say sailors? All right? How many would say domestic helpers? Yeah. How many would say the students? No. And how about professionals? Just a couple, yeah, two or three. The one that said, just keep it simple, the most was by far the professionals. Now help me unpack that. Why do you think that was the case? They're all certainly busy. They're the busiest of them all, probably. Working long, long hours. Okay, so they always already think of themselves as already knowing a lot of things, so that would be a motivation for you to keep it simple. What are they saying? Lisa or Gavin, what do you think? What do you think they're saying? Gavin, what are you thinking? Very good. Very good. They're saying, my life is so complex, I don't have time to think about these things. I just gotta do what the boss wants me to do. We say they're professionals, but they go, I'm not a professional. I'm a corporate slave. You know, with a nice office and a great salary. They're looking at themselves different. Lisa, is that what you're thinking? Something like that? Yeah. Keep it simple, because life is so complex. It's a great thing for us to keep in mind. When you're talking to very, very educated people, don't think that because they're so educated, they can understand just about anything you want to say. They've got so many things coming at them. They have to search through all these sort of things and try to get the idea of what's happening. They need would you just give me a big idea and share with me stories that will help me to understand how I can actually put that in practice in my life. Touch me in my heart. Touch me emotionally, touch me spiritually, touch me in a way that will really impact me. So if I find a really good story that will bring that in, I'll typically try to put that at the end of my sermon. So that's the thing that they will remember. That's the thing that will touch them the most, to say, I'm going to put that big idea into practice. So I recommend you saving your best illustration for the end. That's what people are going to remember anyway. They're going to forget what you said earlier on. So yeah, any of your thoughts about this? Is this, are you catching this striking home for you?
Yeah, actually, many sermons that the pastor always starts to say 3 things, always 3 points.
At your church, is it normally 3 points? Do people say, hey, you only had a 2-point sermon and I gave a full offering today? I feel cheated, you know?
So, is that part of the dominant? Could that be a part of the dominant idea? Or?
All three of those points should relate to the dominant idea, yeah. But I would say if the passage only has 2 points, don't preach 3. If the passage has 3 points, don't preach 2.
And sometimes they flash 3 questions to reflect.
Uh-huh. Okay, so they're trying to give you 3 applications.
3 applications.
Maybe they're different ways. Hopefully all those applications are related to the central idea.
So it's still a good idea to have it as related to the central idea.
Yeah. Because if I'm teaching one central idea and then I go apply over to something else, people are going to be confused. They go, I thought that was the central idea. Shouldn't I practice the central idea? You say I should affirm people who are afflicted. But now you're telling me over here that I should do this or that or this or that. They'll be confused. This is where being clear in your preaching is really quite important. Okay. So here's your your big idea. Right, I covered this before, but let me review it again. Subject, Haddon Robinson calls the main thing that you're trying to say as the subject. Ramesh Richard calls it the theme. I like to refer to that as the question. What is the question that the passage is addressing? And also answering. If you know what that question is, then you can add to the subject the complement or the thrust, which would be the answer. If you know what the question is that the people in the text were facing and how the author gave the answer to that question, we can draw parallels to our lives today in areas where we have similar questions. But you put the subject and the complement together and you've got the big idea. We did this last time. The reason people should praise God would be maybe the question. Why should people praise God? And you tell what the passage says is the answer. Or the test of a person's character is what? What is the test of a person's character? And you answer that, then you're giving a full idea. So if I ask you, well, what did your pastor... What was the central idea of what your pastor talked about last week in last Sunday's sermon? What would you say? If you give me one word, maybe you're on the way to getting it, but if you give one word, you're really only giving me the topic. Okay? So, oh, well, our pastor talked about love. One of the presidents of the United States, Calvin Coolidge, came home from church and his wife wasn't able to go. So she said, so you went to church? He said, yeah. She said, what did the pastor talk about? He said, sin. And she said, well, what did he say about it? And he said, I think he was against it. A single word, I'm just, for the purpose of this course, I'm just calling it topic. To be a subject, it's got to be more than one word. And I'm encouraging you, I'm requiring you to do the Z1X, Z2Y form. So you're saying the reason or the ways or the purpose for this, whatever. That's going to force you to give an actual subject. So a topic is really not a question. You can't have a question with one word. I don't think you can you?
You could say, why? That's not really, why what? It's a question, you know. Or love, you know, whatever. But a subject should be able to be worded as a question. So my subject, my last message was the way we can affirm others. Or put it as a question, how can we affirm others? How can we better affirm people, encourage people? All right? If you just say love as a topic, that you're only given a topic. But if you say the way to love is to do this or that, then you're giving us an actual subject. Or if you say, how should we love? If I was going to preach to you and say, we need to love one another, every one of you would just kind of go, well, amen, yeah, okay, I understand that, I know that. But if I say, how should we love one another? How should we love one another in Homiletics 1? How can you demonstrate love for one another in this class? I bet we could come up with some things you hadn't thought about. One of them I can think of is, I can demonstrate my love by learning how to use the camera there so I can film my fellow students. And that way they've got a copy of their sermon they can look at. Did you catch my little hint there? I need one or two of you, preferably two of you, to say, yeah, I'll do that. There's instructions on there. How can I demonstrate my love for my fellow classmates to learn how to do that? It'll help develop some skills there. Maybe reasons to love. What would be reasons we should love one another? We could develop, just among ourselves, a topical sermon. Why we should love, don't you think? We could do that. All right, that is the theory of it. Now what I want you to do is I want you to practice it. Okay, that was page 29. We're going to go to page 29A. So go to the next page. And here I don't want you to be looking at your PowerPoint, but I want you to here I want you to look at the printed. And if you don't have it, if you want to download it, you can download this on the website under Big Idea, right? If you look under Big Idea, or you go to the website, you'll find that it says you'll find that it has all these various files. So the one I want you to download is number 7 on Big Idea. And that will show you the various statements. What we have are 10 statements here. I asked my students one of the times I was teaching this class, give me what your pastor preached on last Sunday. And spell it out. What was the central idea of what the pastor preached on last Sunday? To see if they can get the idea of what it means to have a main idea or a big idea. And then I had them go ahead and do that. And so I'm going to have you guys work on this for the next 5-10 minutes and then share it together, and then we'll take a break, okay? So we'll just let you guys work on this on your own. And if you're listening to this on the website, I would encourage you just to do the same. Just take some time and go through page 29A so that you are getting some practice at distinguishing between a topic or a subject or a main idea. Each of these statements is one of those three. So put a little tick by one of those three. And if it's not a main idea, then tell me what it is on the right-hand side under evaluation. Well, why is it not a main idea? God has put us together as a family so that we can help one another. Is that a main idea? If it isn't, tell me how you could actually make it a main idea. All right? I'll let you work on that, and then we'll take a break. Okay.